This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 28. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-8867-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name is David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. But it's time for another Pitch Vision Academy cricket show, and I'm joined from around the UK by the two regular presenters. Mark Garraway, welcome, Garrus.
Hello, fella, you all right?
I'm good. And Berners, of course, who is out and about somewhere. You're on your mobile, Berners.
I am. I'm on the mobile. I'm currently at an Argentinian tour game against Ealing CC, and it's getting very, very interesting.
And what's the standard like? What's the standard of Argentinian cricket like based on what you can see in front of you?
Not as good as their T-bone steaks, but work in progress. Yeah, they've got some players that can definitely put Ealing, obviously, one of the UK's more advanced club sides, but we need 90 to win it from about 13 overs.
All right, okay.
With 6 wickets in hand. So, yeah, it's an interesting game. They're going over to Guernsey to compete in an ICC competition. So,
a warm up
for them. So, it's a good test for our boys as well to play an international side.
It definitely is. Argentina, of course, they've got a reputation for using their hands, Gareth.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping that they don't punch it this time. That they actually get two hands on it and take safe catches rather than breaking any knuckles. But different ball, different reaction to being hit by it.
Yeah, definitely. A reference to anyone who's too young to remember, of course, to the 1986 World Cup and Maradona's hand of God when he punched the ball into the back of the net over the flailing Peter Shilton too. Help England go out of that particular competition. But we're not here to talk about football. We're here to talk about cricket. And of course, there's been a lot of talk in the news this week over sportsmanship and the spirit of cricket. And specifically to do with walking, which is a bit of a hardy annual, isn't it, Gareth? Where do you stand on walking?
Well, I think it's a really personal thing. And I tended to walk. I only didn't walk once in my life, and I get reminded of it on a regular basis when I see a certain group of players. I don't think 2 pints would be consumed without a story coming out about how I didn't walk, but it was only once that actually happened, and I thought I did well to get away with it because I actually pulled it on a slow pitch straight to second slip, and I managed to stand there and get away with it. But I've been abused for the next 30 years for it. So that was the only time that ever happened. But the rest of the time I did walk because I just felt that I used to get really, really angsty if somebody nicked one and didn't go myself. So I couldn't get all irate and then stand there and look oblivious. But it's very much a personal thing. And, you know, obviously we're referring to the Stuart Broad incident that happened at Nottingham in the Test match. And Broadie, you know, he's been pretty consistent with it, to be fair, you know, and as long as you're consistent, I think, you know, it's fair game.
Yeah, he is consistent, isn't he? He never walks and he always thinks every single OW is out. I'm sure he'd review every single one given half the chance.
Well, he would do. And, you know, there's been times probably in the last couple of years where he's reviewed things that ultimately haven't been the best decisions, whereas one of the strengths of England presently is their ability within the DRS, and certainly Matt Prior has taken more of a prominent role nowadays, and that bit's been taken away from Broadie. But going back to the original question, you know, Broadie plays his cricket in the way that he wants to do it, and he's been consistent since the day I first met him.
Yeah, and to a certain extent you can understand it where the stakes are so high that careers can rest on a decision like that, and you know, that's what the umpire and technology at that level is there for. But maybe at a lower level, there's an argument the other way. Are you a walker, Berners?
I'd say I am. I often play it on the actual scenario involved. So, you know, if I'm playing against a team where certain things have happened in the game, which have you know, make me wonder and question exactly what the spirit of cricket is all about, then I'm less likely to do it. And if I've just faced a barrage of abuse as well from the opposition, I'm less likely to do it. But I think on average, I would look to walk and play fair. But it always makes me laugh, the spirit of cricket thing. So I think it is largely an NCC slogan, so to speak. So I don't think it's quite foregone in certain other areas, particularly Asia and probably down under. And I think on comparison to other sports, you know, which other sport wouldn't preach to their, you know, their audience or their grassroots players that there was an element of goodwill and spirit. You know, in rugby they would, you know, qualify it as a gentleman's game, and they shake hands and they cheer for the opposition as they walk through them at the end of the game after they've just battered each other for 80 minutes. But yeah. I still don't think someone turns around and questions the official and states that they actually pass the ball forwards when someone's going on to score a try, which ultimately could, you know, do something to their own career and the state of that particular game. They leave that to the officials, and I think cricket is better off just at that level, certainly, with all this technology and all the rest of it. It's saying, you know, the guys who officiate the game make the decisions. If you're out, you're out. And if you're in, you're in. And leave it to that. And then, as Gareth said, if you've got a personal kind of respect or a way in which you want to play it and you want to walk, then good for you. And get on with it. I certainly don't think you can criticise anyone.
No. And me personally, I was brought up by a Yorkshireman, and of course the Jeff Boycott line is that I walk every single time as soon as the umpire puts his finger up. So, and that was inculcated into me from a very early age. It's an interesting one for coaches, though, isn't it, Gareth? I mean, do you leave it up to the personal choice of each individual batsman? Because it tends to become a cultural thing within a side and within an area, doesn't it? You either have people who walk and they're in clusters, or you have people who don't walk and they're in clusters.
Well, I think at the younger ages, we should encourage people to walk and do it properly. But, you know, as people get older, they make their own decisions, don't they? You know, and it would be silly of us to not challenge in a nice way a 7-year-old that stood at the wicket and didn't walk, and to have a conversation about that and explain the spirit of cricket, which I do think is important. I'll be brutally honest with you. And I think some of the Australians and the Australian test teams and one day teams that we played against in the time that I was with England actually played it really, really well. They played it hard, but you know, we're a good group to play against and a good group to socialise with afterwards. And I think they got it pretty much right. And there's never been, although they didn't lose too many games in some of the series that we played against them, when they did lose, they were very, very gracious in defeat. And I think that's a part of the spirit of cricket that we should be trying to enlist within our young players. But going back to a 7-year-old, if they stand their ground because they've seen Stuart Broad do it, I think we've got an opportunity to have a conversation around it. And then when they're at an age around 15 to 20, where they start to formulate their own decision-making, then, you know, that's down to them. But the key thing for me is if you've got somebody who decides that they're going to stand their ground all of the time and then starts moaning about umpire decisions, that's the time where you have to go in as a coach and go, look, you can't have it both ways. You know, you either go one or the other, and you're not allowed to moan about it. And I would always have a big, robust conversation. And I've never had to do it with Stuart Broad, because he won't moan about umpires' decisions, because the way he plays the game, he can't do that. And he understands that, and that's the way to go. But I've had a conversation or two with some kids at schools and some kids that have played under 19 international cricket for Ireland and England, who have stood their ground and reap the rewards occasionally of that, and then will turn around and moan about getting a bad decision. You can't have it both ways. You know, if you play it one way, then you can't expect to get the rub of the grass the other as well.
I think at a higher level as well, with the robotic nature of some of the technology as well now, you know, he's basically standing his ground and he's saying, well, you know, you've got reviews, that's part of the game, that's part of the strategy, that's part of the tactics almost. So if you've used all your reviews up, then that's your fault. If you haven't, then you can go to the review and I'll get given out. So there's also that way of looking at it and saying, well, it's not necessarily cheating. It's a tactical way of playing the game when you've got a review system in place.
And we've seen that, haven't we? You know, and Michael Clarke talked about it very well. And it's another example of the spirit of cricket. Just to listen to Michael Clarke talk after the last Test match was fantastic. In that, you know, he actually congratulated England. He said it was a tough test, that they'd learned plenty, that they'd come back fighting, and that's the Australian mentality that I've seen throughout my career in international cricket, is that that's exactly the way they go about it. And I think sometimes in this country in the past we've gone away from that. We've been, I wouldn't say bitter about losing, but we haven't gone about losing in the right way and learnt lessons that can make them bounce back. And it'll be interesting to see how Australia do bounce back, having accepted that England won the first game, not moaned about it, and just looked at themselves. And I think probably they've set themselves pretty well up for a good comeback in the series.
So what we're saying is that the spirit of cricket is important, and there are different considerations considering what level that you're playing at. But the key really is to be mindful of whatever it is that you're doing, to do it in a mindful way, and don't just do what everybody else does because somebody said to you, only walk when I run out of petrol. That's enough for you to follow that example.
Yeah, be your own person, be consistent, and speak about it, have conversations about it, because you know that this game's a great one, and we want to play it properly. We want to play it hard, because that's why we're all engrossed with the Test series at the moment. And I know that they'll get it right, but there will be talking points, and we'll always have discussions around it, and that can only be a good thing.
Oh yeah.
And above all, it's 1-0it's 1-0 to the mothership.
Okay, so let's head into the yes no round to finish off this section. Three questions, where Gareth and I only get to answer yes or no, no matter how much more we want to say. So, Berners, you've got the three questions this week.
First question. Personality is as important as skills when selecting players.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Look after the process and the outcome looks after itself.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question, Ashton Agar's 98 against England was more luck than judgment.
Yes.
Yes.
Six yeses. It's a full house.
Six yeses. I don't think we've ever had six yeses, have we?
It's a full house. And I think I thought he was at times brilliant, but at times awfully lucky.
Yeah, but you know, he was good on him for chancing his arm, and I loved his attitude. I thought he was great. But will he ever do it again?
Who knows? But the answer to that is no.
We'll leave that one to him, for him to call us.
It's time for this week's interview. And on the show this week, I'm joined by ex-Warwickshire professional cricketer, Scotland international, and now school pro at Bishop's School in South Africa, Neil Carter. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Thanks very much. Good to be on.
Now, Neil, you've had a wide and varied career as a cricketer, and now you're moving into coaching. So, what kind of experiences did you have as a player?
Different paths to what the normal probably kid youngster growing up. Didn't start out being a. I was more of a. Bowled left arm leg spin and batted a little bit, and then just at university just after school I injured my knee and I was out for a while, and then went to university and I was studying and then just started getting stronger and fitter, then started bowling a bit quick, and then just kind of went from there really. So I was a late developer, late starter really. I had about 2-3 years out of game. I worked for a year in offices with a jacket and tie, which was interesting, which was good, very interesting. But I always wanted to play a bit of cricket, then got my break in Paul in Boerland here in Southside Cape Town, and pretty much went from there.
And you've had ups and downs as a cricketer as well, which is an interesting story for those who are sort of aiming to make it into the professional game, in that a lot of people perhaps think that it's a steady progression from through age groups and up into professional cricket, and that's the only path. But you were in and out of the game, and you had successes, and you had times where you weren't so successful. So what's the lesson there for a youngster listening who perhaps is just starting that journey?
Oh, I think you've got to realise that cricket isn't the be all and end all. Obviously, we all want to try and play professionally and all be the best we can, but it's just a game in the end, and it's like not really life and death. So I do advise youngsters to have other focuses so you can get away from the game and focus on other things. But with that, obviously, you need to work extremely hard and never give up. I mean, if you keep working hard and do the best you can, then more often than not, the results will probably come your way, and the breaks that you need will probably be there.
And that moves us nicely into coaching. This is your first role proper going into coaching. What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to just interacting with the kids and giving them opportunity to improve their own game. I never had the opportunity as a kid to receive coaching like these kids can get, and obviously technology we use nowadays for coaching, I had none of that. So it's great now that I can give back to the kids something that which I never got, but more than happy to give something back to them from what I've obviously learned growing into my career and through my career and all that.
You know, of course, the technology available, that you've got pitch vision, the technology available is giving you access to information, a large amount of information that you can feed back to the players. But it's a key role of the coach, isn't it, to nowadays especially, to be that filter between all that raw information and what you pass on to the players.
Absolutely. I think, like you say, filtering it down and just them get to see what they need to see. And I think it's extremely important for a kid to actually be able to see how well they're playing, and also the mistakes that they make. It's a lot easier for them to identify and realize what they're doing wrong and what they're doing right from seeing it than from hearing it from a coach's mouth or from a teacher's mouth or from their parents' mouth, whatever. It's a lot easier seeing it, a lot easier learning from actually seeing it, which is a massive advantage to these young kids.
And are you a big technology guy generally?
Yeah, I've always been big into my stats and all that kind of stuff and technology, and always keen to have a look and see what's actually been going on. And I've looked back on footage over the years and kind of using that footage as muscle memory to get into the brain and think about all the good stuff that I did and why I did it and how I did it and how I was feeling and all that, and kind of get that stuck into my brain to try and repeat over after over, day after day, month after month, year after year kind of thing. So, kids themselves obviously need to will be able to take away all the information they get, but it's up to them as well to also filter it and work out which kind of works for them as well.
Well, Neil, it's Neil Carter. It's great to catch up with you, and good luck in your role for the coming year. Hopefully, Pitch Vision can provide you with the edge for a successful year at Bishop School.
Thanks very much. Much appreciated.
Okay, so good luck to Neil in his efforts, in his school professional efforts there in South Africa. And we now are moving into the question section. So a couple of questions lined up. And, of course, the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Okay, so Berners, what's the first question?
So our first question comes in from Philip, and he wants to know what speed is required to achieve reverse swing, and what other requirements are there for reverse swing to happen?
The quicker the better, according to people that know a lot more about it than myself. Guy from NASA, Rav, he came across, you know, it has to be in excess of 80 miles an hour for proper reverse swing to occur. Now, the interesting one on that is that over the years, we've seen the ball go against the shine, you know, or the conventional swing on a regular basis from even bowlers that bowled it under 80 miles an hour. And my old mate, Paul Collingwood, would love to be an 80 mile plus bowler, but alas, Collie, you never quite got it up that high. and he was getting the ball to reverse or to go against the conventional swing from about 77 miles an hour. So, which sort of put a bit of a question mark against the theory and the research that had been put behind the NASA and ECB research paper that they did. And what they came up with was that that they called this contrast swing. Mm. So it did the same thing as reverse, but it did it earlier. So it swung earlier on the journey between the bowler and the batter. So you can get the ball to do different things. But obviously, the later it goes and the more it goes, the better. And that's what we saw last week up at Nottingham on an abrasive surface, particularly innings, later parts of the second innings through to the end of the game. When the ball gets scuffed up a little bit, it will go when you bowl it over 80 miles an hour. And in that fourth innings, most of the balls that Jimmy Anderson was bowling was only just over 80, sort of 83, 82 miles an hour. But that gives it enough to go. So there's a bit of research behind it, but there is a bit of a question mark that the ball can go less than 80 miles an hour. But the researchers would tell me that that's contrast swing, which would go earlier on the journey from the bowler's hand to the batter rather than reverse swing that we saw fantastically last week, not just by England, but also by some of the Australian bowlers.
Now, most people listening to this are not going to be able to bowl over 80 miles an hour because it's a rare skill. So for those who don't, and it definitely still does do a version of reverse, as you say, Gareth, because I've seen it with very gentle medium paces in club cricket where they hold it for an outswinger and it goes in. So it's definitely something that happens. Seems to happen more in the hotter weather for some reason, but I mean that's just my experience. I haven't got any evidence to back that up apart from my experience, which is fairly flawed method of evidence. But those are two different effects scientifically speaking. But practically speaking, are we looking at doing exactly the same thing, keeping the shine on one side, getting the other side as rough as possible legally?
Yeah, absolutely right. And it comes back to that old adage, you're looking after the ball, doesn't it? And, yeah. And whether you're trying to keep the ball conventionally shiny, so you can get the ball to swing towards the slips or swing back into the stumps, or whether you're going to go with reverse or contrast swing that we've discussed here. The fact is that the people that look after the ball the best are going to have the most chance of it going laterally through the air. And we all know, and we see it every single test match, we see it every week at club level. If you can get the ball to go laterally through the air, it causes no end of problems for any batter. It doesn't matter what stage of their innings they're at. And you know, we're only a little bit into the second test match of the Ashes, and we've seen very little reverse swing so far. And as a result, the run rates have been higher. And in fact, Australia in the first innings have done very well to get England in the position that they ended up being in, because the ball didn't reverse in the same way as we saw it at Nottinghamshire. So any lateral movement is fantastic. Get somebody in your team in charge of that cricket ball. Get them working on it, and whether it's going conventionally or whether it's doing something different when the ball gets a bit older, then it's essential that you've got some shine on one side of that cricket ball. You give yourself the best chance of getting it to move laterally, and your wicket taking will only go up.
And it did used to be a commonly held belief not that long ago that it's, you know, about getting the ball wet, one side of the ball wet, and that still happens. I still see that happening, that, you know, somebody shining the ball. I wrote an article on it this week, in fact, you know, somebody shining the ball by, you know, licking their thumb and then rubbing the side and getting one side of the ball wet. But that theory's sort of gone out the window now, isn't it? It's much more about keeping it as absolutely as dry as possible.
Well, it is, and this is a great discussion because I have this in our office, and one of the best shiners of a cricket ball I've ever seen is Richard Ellison,
right.
who obviously bowled England to victory in 1985, and he talks about, and maybe because he's still got his hair whereas I haven't, he talks about hair follicle oil, and he can get a ball to shine in a very conventional fashion by getting his fingers into his hair, not necessarily making it wet, but just getting some oil in and working that into the leather and getting that really working hard on the ball. Whereas what we've learned in international cricket, and this may be where the Kookaburras do it really well and the Dukes do it really well, if you keep the ball dry and when the ball is beginning to get scuffed up through an abrasive surface, as long as you keep, say, a £2 coin, a 50p coin's worth of shine on the top of the ball, and that's enough to create that tripping effect, which will get the ball to move laterally in the opposite direction to conventional swing. That's the way that we've gone about it. So we have fantastic discussions and teach each other different approaches to getting the ball to move laterally. As I say, he uses the hair follicles, whereas I just use hard work, and we try and keep it as dry as possible, rather than putting any moisture into it. And the only time that I would ever put moisture into a cricket ball would be if we've got a scuff or a raised bit of leather, and then you can use the moisture to push the bit of leather back down and then shine over the top of it. Because unless you actually want an aerofoil to create a bit of a tail and a steer on it, then you want that ball as flat as possible on the shiny side.
You can get these sprays that dry your hands. There was some talk about Graham Swan using it, I think, in the first.
Yeah, day. That's right.
Is
yeah.
that something that yeah. you recommend?
Well, we did it when we were out in India, actually, when Swanee first started playing in Test cricket, because he gets quite sweaty and we're out in very hot conditions. So we got some of his spray in it, and it very much worked for him. And obviously he was bowling for long periods of time. And often when he was operating from one end, we had somebody like a Jimmy or a Stuart Broad or whoever the case may be operating from the other end. And we wanted them to move the ball laterally. Yeah. So it was massively important that Swanee wasn't imparting any of his sweat upon the ball, because if he was doing that, then he was going to basically say, well, I can get wickets at this end or create opportunities and give us control, but actually the six balls at the other end is going to go straight up and down, and that was something that we worked on, and that spray had a contributory effect to it.
Bernard, how's your shining skills? Do you sweat excessively?
Not really, but I always think people are very lazy when it comes to polishing the ball. Mm. It's a long game, isn't it, cricket? And you're only going to do your bowlers a misservice, I think. If you stand around in the field, you can't even polish the ball. I find it incredible that the state of the ball, when I do get a bowl sometimes, it appears to me in. But I'm a mid-honour myself. I'm a mid-honour, so I'm a specialist polisher of the ball. Yeah, you've got to work hard on it. Give it a rub. Doesn't matter what you get on it. Give it a good rub.
Our next question comes in from Varun, and he's saying that they're currently going through an under-19 camp, and they've got two practice sessions each day lasting around 2 to 3 hours each, in which they have a batting net session where two batsmen bat at a time and the rest of the players train on and practice their fielding skills. And he's saying that, generally speaking, they're not able to groove individual technical skills on a regular basis and have to be involved in kind of general other net sessions, either batting, bowling or fielding. And he's saying that he's recently tried to hone these skills at home by doing a bit of shadow work. So using one-handed drills in front of the mirror, that kind of thing. And he's wondering what we can best advise around this.
Yeah, well, I think you're going about it the right way, actually. And I was talking to a very, very successful rugby coach, a guy called Brian Ashton, the other day. And he talks about having scrimmage and not scrumming down, but having different scenario sessions, which he calls scrimmaging within his sport of rugby. And then having drills off to one side, which supports what you're trying to do within the scenario or scrimmage session. So you're basically working on the skills within those drills that are going to make you better when you go back into that scrimmage situation and that scenario situation. And I think that's a fantastic way to go, because sometimes we get too caught up in scenarios, and I love scenarios, but you know, the trouble with scenarios that you don't actually practice your skills outside of those scenarios in is that you'll only ever repeat the same scenario over and over again and be exactly the same. Whereas if you're actually going away from that scenario with some ideas of how you need to get better. So, for example, you might be doing some scenarios around scoring in the middle of a one day game against spinners. Then you go off to one side, or in the interim period between the two scenario sessions, work at your skills in rotating the strike or striking the ball hard down to the deep fielders on the boundary using sweeps or using your feet or whatever the case may be, and then come back in as a more informed and skillful player when you come into the next scenario that's practicing the same thing. So I think that's a magnificent model for the development of cricketers, and it sounds like in a sort of self-reliant way, that's exactly what you've put in yourself.
Yeah, that's a great thing to do, and I guess it's frustrating if you want to do one type of training and then you feel like you haven't got the opportunity to do that. I think it's important to talk to the coach if there is a coach around. I presume there is if it's an under 19 camp. If there's a coach around, talk to the coach and say, you know, I feel like I want to do some grooving and some technical stuff. How can we fit that in? Sometimes you can find some efficiencies. You know, if there's six bowlers in each net, then maybe you can nick one person to do a little bit of grooving stuff with some underarm throws or some ball drops or something like that on the side, and then you can go in and have your net. So you can do Gareth's the idea of combining those different things, bringing the technical skill into the scenario situation, and you can still do it without facing the wrath of the coach. I mean, obviously, it depends on the coach. If the coach decides that that's something that can't be done, then you're kind of stuck with what he wants to do. But
yeah, and that's where, you know, you might have a session where it is about you going and fielding, because you could be limited by numbers, and it sounds like that may be the case here. But it doesn't stop you then from going away and doing some self-reliant skills outside of that session to then come back and be more informed. And that's where things like, I mean, let's be as simple as possible, having your cricket bat, having a tennis ball and a wall, and if you want to practice your sweep shots, lobbing the ball up against the wall, getting yourself in your stance, and then as the ball rebounds off, you can go down and start practicing your sweep and your variety of sweeps if that's what you're working on. And something like that was good enough for the great Don Bradman, and it was certainly something that I didn't achieve to quite his level, but it was something that I did a heck of a lot of. And it's interesting to hear the likes of Ian Healy, who created his own practices that he could then practice his drills and his skills and then go back into scrimmage or scenario sessions and really thrive in different environments as a result of that self-reliant work. So, you know, fantastic that you're taking that off and doing it yourself. That's exactly what I would like to hear from my players that I was working with, doing exactly the same as you. So you've got the balance right, I reckon.
Okay, let's finish this off with the Pitch Vision headlines for this week. So let's head over to the newsroom where Daisy Cutter is waiting.
Thank you, David. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter, and this is the Pitch Vision News. Summer camps in Marlow, UK have taken a jump up in fun. A brand new PV1 system has been delivered to Marlow Cricket Club. Head coach Brian Morton is primed to get young players on the system during club's cricket camp programme. One innings from an Aldi. Pitch Vision Academy cricket show host Berners has scored three ducks for his club side in a row. Another one, he has enough zeros to make the car company logo. Sources close to the left-hander says he's bricking it. Pitch Vision goes a step closer to being a full social media platform this week. Like Facebook, users can share, like and comment on video clips from around the world on Pitch Vision Interactive. We'll be releasing more social media tools very soon, so keep listening to the show for future reports. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
Thank you very much, Daisy. And Berners, we've introduced a new word into my vocabulary there with that news item about your Audi.
Oh, here we go. I knew it would rear its dirty head, and I'm sure our CEO, Mr. Welsh, who's, I think he might be hiding under a duvet at the moment, as he does originate from Australia, but he was all over me. He's been all over me the last week. You know, my fall from grace of being Ealing Cricket Club's second 11 player to the apparent nature of me potentially getting an Audi this Saturday, which of course is four consecutive ducks. So I was going to write in and ask Gareth a question about how to overcome this, but I think I'm big enough and I'm old enough, and I'm just going to swing hard first ball from the hip and hope for the best.
Well, Berners, you can play off the middle of the bat now, because we're going to go into the soapbox. And so it's time for the soapbox. Berners is feeling a little bit tragic because he's hit the ball twice. But don't worry, because he always puts in a good performance when it comes to the soapbox. 60 seconds, Berners. Wow. Over to you.
Okay, well, this week's rant comes from, again, often personally driven, but a slip catching and just the inability for a lot of people to catch in the grippers. And I'm a strong believer in, you know, if you can do things well, do them. If you can't do them, either get good at them and then do them, or don't do them. And from time and time again, it's who wants to field in the slips, and guys go in there, they're lacking confidence, lacking knowledge, technique. You know, fielding in the slips is not something you can just do because you fancy being cool and standing there because it's a hot day. You need to be able to read the delivery. You need to know where you're looking. You need to fundamentally be able to catch the ball. So what I'm saying is, all those people out there that are listening to this, if you can catch the ball in the grippers, stand there. If you can't, do not stand there, because you're doing your teammate disservice.
Oh, Werner's slightly short this week, but always excellent points to be made. We have a fielder who shall remain nameless, who fields in the gully, who was not as good as he was a couple of years ago, but yet he retains his place in the gully by being the senior man when we have a perfectly decent gully fielder standing at mid-on. So it's a source of frustration for me as well.
There you go.
Okay, that's the end of the show. Another cracker, I think. But before we go, we just have to decide on the winner of this week's competition, which is, of course, an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we had Philip's question about reverse swing, and we had Varun's question about doing some grooving when it's all about nets. Which one did you prefer, Karis?
Oh, tight call today. Tight call. I'm going to go with Phillips. One about reverse swing, and we got on to contrast swing, and we got on to looking after a cricket ball, which I would want everybody to get good at and have a contest to see who can be the best in each team. So there you go. There's a challenge out to everybody this weekend.
Nice. Good challenge. Good challenge. Okay, well, congratulations, and you can get yourself an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Now, if somebody wanted to send in their question, get it answered, and also have their chance to win a prize, what would they need to do?
They can give us a call. It's 020-88-167-691 on the phone, or they can email, and it's coach@pitchvision.com.
Fantastic. I do have a request. If your question is, how can I pick up the line of the length of the ball? We have answered it. I don't think there's any variation of it. We can answer it anymore. But that is the question that we get all the time. So if you really feel like picking up line and length of the ball is your question, try and think of another one, because it's probably not going to get asked again on the show. However, you can get in touch with us in lots of other ways. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, or you can head over to Twitter and find us there at PV Cricket Coach, and you can also subscribe to the show. If you want to do that, head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and click on the subscribe button there to get the show delivered to you every week without having to check back. If you don't want to subscribe in iTunes, you can do it in any other way, any other podcatching program. Just head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link for all the information. That's all for this week. So in the baking UK heat, I'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Bernice.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.